Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Anna Boltzer is an American author, commentator, and a prominent voice for Palestinian rights in the Middle East, which wouldn't be that strange if she wasn't also Jewish. Fresh from an appearance on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, she caught up with producer Tom Watts.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Anna.
Thanks for having me.
So, as a Jewish American, kind of majoring in maths and economics, how did you end up being a figurehead for the Palestinian human rights movement?
It's definitely not what I expected. I was never quite very political, but I've always loved to travel, just like Kiwis and Aussies. And I, when I was teaching in Turkey, I started traveling through the Middle East, backpacking. And along my way, especially in Syria and Lebanon, I began to meet for the first time in my life Palestinians. And it was through my friendships with them that I began to hear a very different version of the history and present of Israel-Palestine from anything I had ever heard or learned growing up as a Jewish American. And, you know, being Jewish and being an American, I never heard anything about the Palestinian narrative. And although I at first was very skeptical and thought that these people were brainwashing me, it prompted me to go and do a little bit of research and eventually to go see with my own two eyes. And ever since then, I've been hooked.
Right. So what would you say those fundamental differences are between the kind of the Israeli narrative and the Palestinian narrative?
Well, I don't like to call them Israeli and Palestinian because, right, of course, Israelis as well as Palestinians are very diverse societies. And in Israel itself, in fact, there's a lot of discussion and dissent on the occupation. And so oftentimes what I present in my presentation, you know, in my lectures, is something that many Israelis would agree with, and yet oftentimes outside of, you know, in the West, these things are considered very taboo to talk about, to criticize Israeli human rights violations. But the narrative that I grew up with was one of sort of Israel being a peace-seeking democracy that was simply constantly under attack by anti-Semitic neighbors. And what I actually found on the ground, and what Palestinians have been saying for ages and now is really coming to light as human rights groups and the international community investigate more what's happening and spend time there, is that there's a system of apartheid, basically. That there's, for example, in the West Bank, I witnessed a system of segregated roads, segregated license plates, where people's rights depend not on their citizenship or their humanness, but on the God they pray to, on their religion or their ethnic background. And that Palestinians really are living under a system of occupation and discrimination just because of their ethnicity and religion. And that's quite, that was shocking to me, because to me, these things are fundamentally contrary to the basic tenets of social justice in Judaism.
Absolutely. Well, you used the word apartheid. That was a deliberate word?
Yes. I mean, the UN has an official definition of the crime of apartheid, and Israel's system fits it exactly. It has to do with segregation according to ethnic background, demographic groups, restrictions on you know, marriage, restrictions on housing, on access to resources. These are all, it actually fits it just right. And South African leaders such as the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela, and others have said that this is apartheid. In fact, in some ways, it goes even further than South African apartheid did.
Right. So how long did you spend on the ground there, approximately?
I've been there every year since 2003, and I spend sometimes a couple weeks, sometimes several months at a time. I've been there about 9 months altogether.
Mm-hmm. And so you've probably seen some relatively kind of rough, harrowing kind of things?
Yes. I mean, I've interviewed women who went into labor and were trying to get to a Palestinian hospital, but were stopped at Israeli checkpoints, military checkpoints, and prohibited from crossing simply because they're Palestinian. I've witnessed attacks on them by the settler population, which are Jewish Israelis who move into the West Bank, pushing off the indigenous Palestinian population, building towns and cities for their own population, and then are given privilege, able to travel easily, able to have equal rights under Israeli law, where Palestinians are denied those same rights. And I've at the same time as witnessing all of these abuses, I've also been able to witness the incredible movement of nonviolent resistance against the occupation, where Palestinians, along with Israeli supporters and internationals, are marching hand in hand to cry out against this system that is bad for everyone in the area.
So you're a big advocate for nonviolent resistance. approximately how much of the resistance that kind of exists is non-violence? Because from what we see, the majority of it tends to be relatively kind of violent.
Yeah, in fact, when we hear about Palestinian resistance, that's all we hear about is suicide bombs and rocket attacks.
Absolutely.
And of course, those things are happening, but the vast majority of Palestinian resistance is actually non-violent. We just don't hear too much about it. And that's why I think it's important to talk about, because it is, not because it's the only kind, but because it's the kind that we don't tend to hear about. And the nonviolent resistance is not only on the ground, but actually extends to the global community around the world. Likewise, you know, in the system of apartheid in South Africa, the movement was, of course, on the ground in South Africa, led by people like Nelson Mandela. But it was a global movement, actually, of people of conscience around the world saying, you know, if South Africa is not going to stop its oppression of people of color in South Africa, we are no longer going to pay for it and profit off of it. And that was the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement that is now also being applied at the call of Palestinians to Israel until it complies with international law and respects the human rights of everyone in the area.
Right. So it seems that one of the large issues here is, you know, the kind of the process of making knowledge and all of those kinds of things. If I had to guess, I assume there would be some issues with the way in which this conflict is covered in certainly the American mainstream media.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of this is left out. I mean, even, you know, a well-intentioned person like myself, I'd never heard about any of this stuff. And that's what's so disturbing, particularly given the fact that, you know, of course, in the United States, we're the ones paying for it. The fact that Americans, you know, my government, i.e. me as a taxpayer, we're giving more than $3 billion every year to support what Israel's doing. So I think, and you know, in New Zealand, obviously, it's not the same at all financially, but diplomatically, politically, the ties are there. And generally speaking, the New Zealand government has supported Israel. And so I think not just as human beings, but also as people in New Zealand, it should be of concern, the things that are happening with the support of your government, just as I am against things being done in my name as a Jew and with my tax dollars as an American.
How easy is it to actually get to into Palestine?
Well, if you first of all, Israel controls the entire area, and so you have to you're stopped by soldiers and border police, and you have to get through them first. Now, if you went there as a tourist to, you know, experience the glory of Israel, you would get a warm welcome to Israel, and that's what I got when I first went apolitically. And then when I went back and I wanted to see what was happening for the non-Jewish population, the Palestinians there, I have been strip searched, I've been interrogated, I've been harassed. But I have always been let in, and I imagine that has a lot to do with being American and Jewish. Many people of Palestinian background, as well as other sympathizers with human rights issues in Palestine, have been actually systematically denied entry, imprisoned, etc. So Israel has been actually quite restrictive. And to me, it says, you know, if you're a democracy and you claim that you have nothing to hide, that you're, you know, so virtuous, why this fear of people documenting the situation?
You've got quite a relatively controversial kind of approach to this. Do you get challenged a lot by Zionist groups and those kinds of things?
I do.
How do you cope with that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the footing is gradually being lost. I think it's clear and clear to the average person, political or not, that Israel has made grave mistakes, to put it mildly. You know, the way that I respond is simply to focus on the facts themselves. Usually, it resorts to some sort of a character attacks and name calling, because there's really no disputing the actual facts that I present. That
I read
every
Chomsky
objective
on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I mean, every objective source out there, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty, the UN. You know, these groups have been very consistent in finding Israeli apartheid policies to be against international law, and that's of course very scary for sympathizers of Zionists to hear, particularly from a Jew, because of course Israel pretends to represent me, but it does not.
Mm. And so, what approximately should the relationship be like? Should this be a state of Israel, and a state of Palestine? How is that meant to kind of all line up?
Well, you know, of course, it's up to the people themselves to determine precisely where the borders would be drawn, or one state, two state, 10 states, I don't really care.
But there is a need to redraw the borders.
To me, it's not so much where you draw the borders or how many states you have, it's about the quality of them, that there be equal rights and human rights for all people. Now, the classic solution called the two-state solution basically says one state for Jews, you know, one Jewish state, one non-Jewish state of Palestine. And to me, that's like solving apartheid in South Africa by saying, well, these people can't get along. Let's put all the black people on one side and Indians, and then all the white people on the other. And so a lot of people are saying this idea of ethnic segregation is not what will actually address and combat the racism, but rather reinforces it. What would it look like if this entire area that's already under the control of one government, the Israeli government, what would happen if we actually gave equal rights to everyone? And that's a very scary idea for those who are more attached to Israel as a Jewish state than as a democracy. But I think it is one that opens the door to democracy and to peaceful coexistence. And as long as the human rights of everyone are respected, refugees included, Jews, Muslims, Christians, you know, it's really up to them what exactly it's called or looks like.
Thank you so much for your time, and keep on fighting the good fight.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Anna Boltzer talking to producer Tom Watts. For more information, head along to annainthemiddleeast.com. That's all we've got time for on this week's show. If there's something you'd missed or you'd like to hear again, pop along to our podcast, publicaddress.net/radio. While you're there, check out the newly revamped Public Address website. It's well worth a look. I've been Damien Christie.
And I've been Paul Deedy.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air.